Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
It's time. It's time. It's Vader time. Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
Hey, you know, another good day. It's just, we're in the heart of, the road to the Mania. You know, I'm going to say it every week, I feel like, because it's just, how could you not be excited about that? Just a lot of wrestling happening, and there's nothing wrong with that. We had, two pay-per-views recently. We got an AEW show coming up as well. Just, it's a good time to be a wrestling fan. It's the only way to put it.
Well, today we're on the road to WrestleMania 13, 1997. I think, Jeff, and I was really excited to cover this one. Conrad and Bruce had mentioned this on their show maybe a year ago. And so I went back and watched the match, and I'm like, holy shit, was that good. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to actually cover this one and watch it and discuss it while we're watching it. But this is just a hidden gem during that magical 1997 era of the WWF, where they were doing a lot of really good stuff. We're building the Steve Austin becoming a star, Bret Hart with his heel turn and his great work there. It's just a lot of stuff that was great during this era. So I'm pumped to get in this one. What about you?
Yeah, this is one where I guess there has to be a stop at March Madness on the road to WrestleMania. You know, that's just how it is. And so that's why we get Final Four. But man, like when we'll get into it with the story here, like there was a lot of this made sense. We've had 2 weeks now where these like late 90s, I know that's a sweet spot for you, if like some of these matches and things like that. Like, boy, everything just kind of fell into place like it should. It just made sense in a lot of ways. And this one had a little bit of behind the scenes kind of drama as well too, if you will. But for the most part though, like it just worked, you know, and that's how it should be sometimes. You don't need to overthink it sometimes. Like just give us a good bit, like a good build and a good match and, wrestling, send us home happy type thing. Like that's all we kind of need. And let's get the fireworks at the end of the show and be happy. So, it's just another one where I don't remember who picked this one, but, we'll just say you are because you heard it on the Conrad, with Conrad and stuff like that. But, just a good one to get into.
All right, well, let's get right into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
So we're in Chattanooga, Tennessee, at the UTC Arena. That's great, the city. University of Tennessee, yeah. Chattanooga. Okay, 6,400. They ran a lot of buildings like this in this era, man. Smaller venues, but probably a hell of a place to watch a wrestling card. So we start off with Mark Marrow defeating Leaf Cassidy, better known to fans as Al Snow, in about 9 minutes. Marrow accompanied with Sable. They're still doing that whole thing, although that certainly wouldn't last much longer. Marrow, just one of those guys, man, that they really couldn't figure out how to use him the right way. The stuff with Sable was good, but I just felt like an underused talent because they gave him that stupid ass wild man gimmick that just made no sense. I'm the wild man. I'm wild. Well, it's not that interesting. Then we got a 6-man match, the Nation of Domination defeating Bart Gunn, Flash Funk, and Goldust. Who could forget that tag team of Bart Gunn, Flash Funk, and Goldust?
What a trio. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the Nation of Domination, man, some good stuff, dude.
We need to get some of their matches on here. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to try to find one. That was just a really good little group, and there were a couple incarnations of it, but that was fun. Rocky Maivia is your Intercontinental Champion. He's going to retain against Hunter Hearst Helmsley in 12 minutes. I always forgot about that other music that Hunter Hurst Helmsley was using at one point. That dun 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 dun.
Yeah,
dun,
like
dun,
the dun. Yeah, I know it's that one on that first theme or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So he had that one outside of the, you know, the do 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 do. So he had like two different themes there early on. Doug Furness and Phil LaFon would defeat Owen Hart and British Bulldog by DQ. Owen and Bulldog are your tag team champions. So in 10 minutes, they're going to win by DQ. I was always a Furness and LaFon fan. I really liked their work a lot, but never really were able to get going in the WWF. And then the reason we're here, man, four corner elimination match, Bret Hart, Steve Austin, Vader, and The Undertaker. I got a lot to talk about, but we'll talk about during the match. As you said, a really just well laid out storyline. It all kind of made sense. Walk us through how we got to this four corners match.
Yeah. So it's the first feud in this, you had Bret Hart and Stone Cold. And so that could kind of been going on again, like this, you know, mid February, 1997 is when this In Your House took place. But really the Austin Hart feud had been happening and kind of brewing since King of the Ring, 1996, just a little bit prior to this. And so, maybe 6-8 months, so you had Hart at the time, actually taking a leave of absence from the company, just leaving for a little bit. It was actually after he lost that the championship match to Shawn Michaels. It was the Iron Man match, WrestleMania 12. It was kind of in the air that he might not return, whether, you know, who knows, behind the scenes politics of it all, but that's just kind of how it was. But you had Austin, though, really kind of laying into Hart, even though he wasn't around, trying to, again, just like last week, trying to get a match out of somebody. You did eventually have Bret returning. It was Survivor Series that November to beat Austin. This is I haven't done it in a while, but I like kind of, you know, putting us in that time frame of kind of when these things are happening. This would have been a year before the screw job. And so you've got this kind of big year with, you know, the King of the Ring. You got the Michaels Hart Iron Man match. You've got Survivors, Bret and Austin, kind of doing their thing as well too. This is before the screw job was even a thing. So just kind of be aware of like where we're at and what's kind of going on with those guys. So you have the two of them, two of our four competitors, but then the other two, you had Undertaker and Vader. You actually had Paul Bearer at the time who had aligned himself with Vader. It happened at that SummerSlam 1996. So happening at that point, Vader actually had just joined WWF that year. And so, kind of getting drawn into the feud, just how it played out kind of made sense with them. You know, they were having their feud, Austin and Hart having theirs as well, too. So really the best way to look at this is it started kind of getting nutty. It was at the 1997 Royal Rumble. There was just shenanigans where there were the final five wrestlers where for these four guys, you had the Undertaker, Vader, Bret, Stone Cold, and Diesel. Now, when I say Diesel, though, this was Kane Diesel. This was fake Diesel. This was Glenn Jacobs Diesel. And so the first of those wrestlers who were tossed over the top rope, you had Austin, who was thrown out by Bret Hart. But at the time, the officials were not paying attention because they were trying to separate Terry Funk and Mankind, who were brawling on the other side of the ring. And so nobody actually saw Austin's elimination. Then you had Vader and Undertaker brawling with each of them kind of continuing their feud. And then you had Bret fighting Diesel, but Austin kind of coming back into the ring. Austin flipping Undertaker and Vader out of the ring, and then Bret eliminating Diesel. So I feel like this is for years. So even since this pay-per-view, we now pay attention to who is and is not eliminated because of situations like this, which I hate. I think it takes away from it. It's a shitty way to fucking end the match. But you have Hart celebrating though, thinking he had won, but Austin kind of coming in from behind and tossing Bret over the ropes. You know, you and I think watching, especially this year's Royal Rumble, like you knew, like it was almost too early that Orton came out, because I lost focus on the match, because the whole time all I could think was, when is Orton going to come back and fucking ruin it for us? Like, when is he going to come back and toss Edge over the ring, and then we're not going to fucking get what we want, which it should have been. I'm fired up about this one. Like, I have very strong feelings on this. Like, you know, I think it's garbage. The fucking like 2 feet, like, let's get, like, if you are outside of the ring, you're outside of the ring. Like, you know what, Kofi and Naomi, I love what you do. You do a great job of it, but enough is enough. Like, let's adhere to the Shawn Michaels rule. Let's go back to the days of old. If you are out of the ring, you're out of the ring. This under the rope bullshit, through the ropes, like, I can jump to the announce table and then walk the guardrail. Yeah, it looks sweet as hell, but like, sometimes you just want to watch Otis get tossed over the top rope and know that he's out. That's it. So yeah. Anyways, so add this to my list of things I feel strongly about, like that in the Inferno match coming back. But it's just one of those things where, so you had that, and then so since Austin, nobody seeing that he had been eliminated, it was considered to be in the match. It was the only man left. He was then declared the winner. So the next night, though, Monday Night Raw, Hart came out. It was at the start of the show. He was pissed because really a work shoot. Like, you know, demanding that Vince gave him a WrestleMania title shot, that as far as he was concerned, he was the last man in the Rumble and the winner of the match. And then, you know, the work shoot of this, you know, when McMahon ignored him, Hart walked out, said he was quitting. That was it. And so someone we haven't talked in a while, and I feel like, you know, this would make for a great documentary if the WWE did. But at the time, Gorilla Monsoon, though, of course, our favorite WWF president, making the announcement that the previous night's event, that since, you know, of course, that there was a long-standing policy, as we all know, like the long-standing policy that all referee decisions were final. Duh. We all know that, of course, that Austin's victory at the Rumble stood. But he refused to award Austin the WrestleMania title spot because of his actions. And so, again, just like last week when we were talking about it, like, hey, that kind of makes sense. Like, you know what? He won the match. There's nothing we can do about that. But we can strip this WrestleMania, or, you know, strip it from him right now and figure out what we're going to do. So Gorilla, though, deciding that instead he came up with the final four. This was the special elimination match featuring Austin, Undertaker, Vader, Bret Hart. And so because Austin had illegally returned to the match, that, you know, that they were going to have this fatal four-way final four match. Hart returned to the ring and said that he would reconsider, like, quitting at this point, participating in the match because of what Gorilla Monsoon had did. Gorilla Monsoon to the day, thank God. And we got to get this. So, and then that, because of that, the outcome of this, it was be contested for the guaranteed title shot at WrestleMania 13. And so, you had this, and of course, in kind of to bring it all together of kind of who had the belt at this point. So you had these four guys that kind of wanted the belt, but it was that Royal Rumble. You had Shawn Michaels defeating Sid. He was actually regained the championship that he had lost at Survivor Series. So interesting here that, you know, unless he lost that title before WrestleMania, you now have Shawn Michaels, which will be going against one of these four people. So, but I said there was some behind the scenes politics here. There were some things that were kind of happening and going on that, you know, just what was happening. So I'll kind of read this verbatim because it gets a little weird, but I want. And so it said, as Bret Hart recalled, the plan was for him to face Michaels in a rematch of their classic at WrestleMania 12 in 1996. In that match, Hart was supposed to defeat Michaels for the WWF championship as a reward for agreeing to lose the year before. However, on a special edition of Raw that aired on February 13th, 1997, Michaels announced that he was vacating the championship. Several weeks earlier, he had wrestled Hart and Sid and suffered a knee injury. Michaels revealed that doctors told him that the damage was severe enough that he would likely have to retire from wrestling. He also said that he had, quote, lost his smile, which, Tom, you know, you can talk about that at length. Yeah, I know you like that one. And he needed to find it again, and thus he was walking away. Hart was said to be furious with the situation. He believed that Michaels was only doing so so he could get out of having to lose the belt to him, as they agreed upon, and that the injury was not as bad as he was letting on. So, and we'll come back to that point because I got thoughts on it. And so, but you know, no matter what, you know, you had the entire situation. It was the WWF Championship. It now is just, you know, we didn't know what was happening there either. So Sid Vicious, of course, Psycho Sid, as the number one contender, was scheduled to face Michaels, but now he couldn't. And so the participants in the final four match also had to, like, the title was vacant. That's how it was. So in order to kind of fix what happened, Gorilla Monsoon, again, to the rescue, said that Sid was still guaranteed a title shot and that he would get it on the Raw before In Your House, but then the final four match would also be contested for the vacant belt, and the winner making the first defense against Sid. And so, kind of, you know, that piece of it making sense of, like, okay, whoever wins the final four, then your first match is going to be against Sid. We got a little longevity built into this. We know who, you know, it makes sense from the Sid angle. You know, all of it, it just kind of worked. You just kind of had all this and kind of what was happening and things like that. Now, I will say, I know over the years, and Tom, I don't know what you kind of have heard as well too. This was not the first time I had read or at least been aware of the kind of behind the scenes craziness that was potentially involved with Michaels dropping the belt on this one. What I'm sure you've got thoughts on this.
Oh, it just seems like that was the plan, was, you know, WrestleMania 13, Brett, Sean rematch in Chicago, and Brett wins. And, you know, it's interesting because we rarely got WrestleMania main event rematches. Mm-hmm. So I find it hard to believe they would have just gone to that, but that's the word on the street. You know, we would have never had Brett Austin. We may have not gotten the Brett heel turn. So, you know, yeah, two thoughts being, one, everything worked out better because of that. Number two, though, is, yeah, it would have been nice had Brett and Sean gotten along. It would have been nice to have seen a really good trilogy of matches. So it's like number one being the Iron Man match, WrestleMania 12, maybe number two is WrestleMania 13, but, you know, getting that second match and then a rubber match. I mean, what could have been if we got a true rubber match? That's the thing with Brett and Sean, is, you know, as interesting of a rivalry as it was, you got a match back in 92, I believe it was, when Brett was champion and Sean was Eric Cottonell champion. You got your WrestleMania 12 match, and then you got the screw job match. See, that's all you really got. You never, you know, you didn't really get the classic Sean Brett matches that we should have got. You got one Iron Man match that some people love, some people hate. I personally happen to love it. And then you know, got the final match, which, so, you know, that's the sad part of, you know, this whole Bret Hart era, is we didn't get great matches with him and Sean, because those two, I mean, they could have had 8 classic matches. You could have done a best of 7, right? I mean, you know, you could have had them in a Hell in a Cell match instead of Taker and Sean. I mean, there's so much that could have happened during this era, but it didn't happen for obviously a variety of reasons. But, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I mean, that's the problem that, you know, with Brett leaving, is that he ended up in WCW. You didn't get more Austin matches. You didn't get more Taker matches. You didn't get Shawn matches when he came back. There's a lot of matches that we just didn't get with Bret Hart. And that's this era. You know, then you start saying, well, what if he would have been in there with The Rock? What could he have done with Mick Foley? What could he have done with Triple H? What could he have done with a heel Vince McMahon? So we just didn't get any of that. And it's a shame. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think back again, I know I referenced it last week too, but it was, I had texted you when we were watching I was watching the Yokozuna, and we were not watching it together. But I just feel like Brett is, the more I see of him, I know he's not well liked by anyone, just a lot, or by a lot of people, not anyone, but by a lot of people, because he speaks his mind. But I just feel like he's a no bullshit type of guy. Like, and so I feel like him, he knows the business, I feel like, better than anyone. And my favorite quote, I think, or, you know, or one of my favorite quotes from that one was, and I texted it to you, was like when he said, quote, I just wanted to put my finger down my throat about the Mania 9 finish. Like, it's just, you know, he was talking about Yokozuna forgot part of the match and things like that. And then the Hogan stuff, it's just, yeah, like he was not a big fan of that. But I, you know, part of me believes, like, you know, and I've said before in this show too, like, I wonder if Sean and Brett were, I've caught shit online for it too. Like, Brett knew and about the screw job and things like that. And we were all getting worked. And I know I got a couple people messaged me and said, you don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, it's my opinion. Like, and I'm not the only one that feels that way, so that's fine. And it's just wrestling, so it's not a big deal if I'm right or wrong. But I think that's how it is. And I just feel like, especially all this, like, you know, some of the behind the scenes drama, like, yeah, Undertaker and Vader, I didn't talk too much about it, but they had a feud that was been going on for a long time. But the Brett stuff really being the focus on this one, because especially if you take into account what the potential build should have been and then the payoff for him, it just didn't happen. So, yeah. Yep. But, well, let's talk about this one. We've got
a lot to talk about. So, we are in your house, Final Four, February 16th of 1997. We are at the 1 hour and 17 minute mark. The 1 hour, 17 minute mark. Jeff, are you ready?
Unlike last week, I am ready and prepared to watch the match.
All right. Let's get into the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All right. We got all four guys that, I mean, they just started brawling. It's just brawling. Awesome. Yep. Right? I mean, four big time professional wrestling stars here for sure.
Yes. Well, and I'll start us off. It's been in the kind of the wrestling, like, conversation. Oh, Undertaker flying through the air. Yep. It's been in the wrestling conversation right now and kind of what's happening and things like that. But, and I'll just ask you point blank, is the current product soft?
So there's two ways I look at this, right? Is the in-ring product soft? No. These guys are working really good matches, really stiff, really, I mean, the actual wrestling is great. Is the storyline soft? Yes. It's soft as hell. I mean, yeah. It's scripted bullshit. You know, I'll tell you, Jeff. So, and they've done this a few times now. I saw, without looking for it, right? I mean, I find this picture of all 30 women that were in the Royal Rumble sitting there arm in arm, smiling together.
I saw the same photo, I'm assuming.
Okay,
yes.
So yeah, it's soft. Okay. That to me is where the product's soft. It's like everyone's friends, kumbaya, we're going to, you know, film a wrestling show and then we're going to talk about how it's fake and we're all friends and we're going to take a picture together and we're all best friends and we're all going to cry for how happy we are for each other. Yeah. You know what? Wrestling is soft. So, you know, the wrestlers are going to tell you bullshit. It's soft. You know, we're beating the hell out of each other. We're doing all this high flying stuff. You know, we're doing last man standing matches. We're doing Hell in the Cells. We're doing elimination chambers. And in that regard, they are absolutely right that it is the actual physical wrestling is not soft, but the storylines, the, you know, presentation of, you know, the conflicts, the behind the scenes stuff, the network stuff of how everyone's buddies and it's all a big, yeah, that is soft. That's my opinion. What about you? And by the way, really hot start to this match, man. Vader is bleeding, it looks like.
On his arm, yeah. We got Vader and Taker outside. Yeah, Brett and Austin inside. Yeah, my read of that and how it was said, it was like it was far more, I say, behind the scenes soft. You know, I think it was who was it? Oh my gosh, Xavier Woods. You know, kind of making the comment like, okay, so we've got like PlayStations and shit in the locker room. Like, I don't think we want some of the stuff that you guys were doing in the locker room in our locker room.
Like, well, I mean, that's fair. I mean, these guys were, you know, a lot of them were either, you know, during or after the show, I mean, pills and alcohol, drug, and
yeah,
drugs,
everything,
and,
yeah, all that, know, yep.
You know, steroids from Mexico, and yeah, I mean,
the plane ride from hell, we've all heard, you know, that stuff, and the hotel pictures, like that's some of these documentaries they're able to put on, and like the photos they're showing. So the guys are at the bar, like,
you know, and I'll give you an example, and take her with a choke slam on Vader. And by the way, we need to find a Vader match from his prime. Well, I know we've been talking about it on here, but we got to find, you know, either Sting or Mick Foley. I'd love to find a Vader match from his prime. So let me point out an interesting example of this. So Bret Hart recently, and when I say recently, a couple of years ago, he was backstage, you know, at an event, and he basically said something along the lines of, "Oh yeah, these guys are all sitting there drinking milk and cookies. Like it's a far different locker room." Jeff, his brother-in-law died from steroids and pill abuse. Mm-hmm. Okay. One of his mentors is, what's his name? Davey Boy's tag team partner. Dynamite Kid.
Yeah.
He's in a fucking wheelchair. Why? Well, because he lived a hard life. Okay. So it's funny how a guy like Bret Hart that, and I mean, his, you know, obviously Owen was an accident, but he's had, you know, Davey Boy's been gone. Jim Neidhart's gone. I mean, all these guys are gone and they all lived hard. You know, Roddy Piper's gone. I mean, all these guys, Kurt Hennig. I mean, you go down Rick Rude, you go down the list of all these guys that Bret traveled with and some of whom were his good friends. And, you know, he's complaining because it's all milk and cookies. Well, yeah, Xavier Woods is right. We're playing video games. We're not getting fucked up after shows. You know, we're not popping a thing of pills to be able to fall asleep at night. So, right. You know, yeah, there's things about the business that I wish were still there. And I wish that, you know, some of the grittiness of it was absolutely around. But to sit there and like slam the locker room because the guys aren't living the same lifestyle is absolutely absurd. And it's troubling coming from a guy who so many people around him are either, you know, in very poor shape or gone. Vader's an example of that. And again, I mean, some of it, you know, I'm not saying everyone, you know, lived too hard. And I know it's a combination of things, and some of it's just the lifestyle being on the road and the physical wear and tear. But a lot of these guys, I mean, they did things to their bodies that were extremely harmful, and they've either paid the price in terms of pain and suffering, or they're no longer with us. And so, yeah, it is milk and cookies now. Which I have no problem with and playing video games. My issue with the business now in terms of softness, I'm glad that they've cleaned up the locker room. I'm glad they have the drug testing. I'm glad that the style's a little bit safer in terms of chair shots to head and stuff like that. The issue of softness is really around, I believe, the way that storylines are come up with, and it's scripted. There is no real life element thing to it. I like when Matt Hardy and Edge are feuding over Lita, and it's real life and it's not some script bullshit. I like that. Okay. Yep. That's what's made wrestling great, is when there's just some reality in things, right?
We've talked about this before. Yep.
Randy Savage, he really was jealous about people and Liz. Okay, there was a little bit of truth to all of that. Okay,
that was crazy. Yeah, seeing those documentaries. Yeah,
yeah. And so, you know, Bret and Shawn, they didn't like each other. It made for incredible TV. Taker didn't like Shawn. He thought he was a punk. Made for great TV. I mean, so yes, it's soft, but I think you have to decipher what is soft. It's not the actual physical in-ring product. It's not the fact that guys, you know, aren't, you know, getting up and getting down with a variety of recreational drugs after the show. That's not it either. Yeah, Vader, just his eyes all jacked up from a legit spot. All four guys still in it. I do think that the storylines and the personalities and the characters, that I think it just needs to be grittier. It needs to be rawer, no pun intended. And it needs to be a little bit more authentic and organic. But instead, we just get these, it's just characters, you know, they're doing a thing and then they're you know, talking about how fake it is afterwards. So Bret Hart and Vader, like all the way back in the entrance there, you know, Vader, I mean, I guess the knock on him in this era is he's just, you know, he's a little overweight, he's slower, he's lost a step, he's had injuries. So, you know, it's tough for me to compare it to, cause I just don't remember some of his stuff.
Yeah.
But we got to go back and find it. But it's like, man, A for effort. It's like the guy's body probably was broken down at this point, but it wasn't for a lack of effort. I mean, and it's just great seeing him in the spot. I just wish we would have gotten more of Vader as a main eventer, Vader with the title. I mean, really, the only time he, I mean, really sniffed the main event was SummerSlam 96 against Shawn. And that was supposed to be a trilogy where they were going to trade the title. They ended up using Sid instead to take the title off Shawn because I think the knock was just Vader was just a step and a half behind.
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah, and to put a bow on, like, for me in the soft stuff, I would argue that, like, the current product in regards to athleticism and kind of what they're doing in the ring is, like, they are tougher than, like, some of these guys. And I get, like, I will debate that. I won't necessarily die on that hill, but cutting backstage watching Sid watching, I like some of the stuff they're doing, and I compare it to, like, there's that, I mean, you might have seen it, like that cross-section video of, like, one of, like, the first Olympic vaults ever versus, like, last year's gold medal winning, like, a championship vault, and, you know, in the Olympics and things like that, of, like, the products just evolved. So the stuff we're seeing, like, yes, the Undertaker has kind of dove over the ropes before, or, you know, the suicide dive, but, you know, we're seeing it done different ways. You know, we're seeing, and then there's the argument of, like, the flips and shit and stuff like that. But I think that, like, what we're seeing in regards to in-ring product is definitely not softer on any level than anything these guys were doing now. Yeah. And it was Sasha actually that, you know, recently was kind of interviewed and saying she's in some of the best shape of her life because of the pandemic. And yeah, it makes sense.
Oh, because mentally, physically, everything.
Everything. Right? Yeah. And so because, imagine, yeah, you know, you're, you know, 4, 5, 6 nights a week, like, you're constantly on the road, you know, you're doing these different things. You're trying to, you know, your body just doesn't have time, you know, because you're always traveling and on the go and things like that. Well, yeah, you know, if for anybody, like, imagine, like, you've got, you know, in essence, the better part of a year now where your body can just kind of, like, catch up with itself. Like, you can sleep in your own bed for, you know, the better part of, you know, 8 to 12 months. Like, yeah, for anybody's well-being, you figure that's got to go a long way. Like, I hope they don't bring back live shows after all that, or, like, live, like, you know, the dark nights, if you will, like the house shows, because you know, do I want to go see wrestling on a Wednesday night? Whatever, you know, and I'd be perfectly fine with doing, like, a Monday or a, you know, Friday or pay-per-view or something like that. But I, you know, just for the longer scope of, like, these, you know, do I want to watch AJ Styles for another 4 or 5 years? Yeah. I don't want him killing himself because he's out there working all these house shows and shit like that. And so in that regard, yeah, maybe someone would argue, no, they're softer because they're not doing that stuff. Well, you know, I don't know. Like, I think that we get a better product when we don't have that. So
look, you could never do another house show again, and I'd have no problem with it for every reason.
And they have the most profitable year ever, which they did.
Vader's on top rope.
And this is the, yep. And there's the,
misses the moonsault. We still have all four guys in there. I mean, everyone's on their feet. You know, these are four of, I guess, maybe the 6 biggest stars in the, you know, company at this point, outside of Shawn and Sid, I guess. But I mean, these are just, you know, just four heavyweights, just big time stars. They're beating the hell out of each other. Really, really good match. Good stuff. Jeff, I like this 4-way concept a lot, because it's like, you just have 2 good matches going on at the same time versus, you know, the 3-way where sometimes it's kind of clunky because there's, you know, either 3 guys in the ring or 1 guy's just, you know, playing possum on the floor. Vader's just pouring blood. Taker's, you know, got him with some wire there choking him. This is great. So I just pulled up a list, Jeff, of the top 4-way matches ever, because I'm like, they just don't do these 4-way matches enough, I don't think. So here's the list I'm looking at. 10 was Sheamus, Alberto Del Rio, Orton, and Jericho at Over the Limit 2012. Number 9 was a four-way tag match from WrestleMania 34 involving Ustos, Black and Ricochet, Barr, and Rusev and Nakamura. 8 was a four-way between Charlotte, Bayley, Sasha, and Becky from an NXT one.
We've got that 7 on our list, yep.
7 was Del Rio, Kane, Edge, and Mysterio, TLC 2010. 6 was SummerSlam 2017, Lesnar, Strowman, Joe, and Reigns, which was awesome. 5 is Jericho, Benoit, Guerrero, and X-Pac from No Way Out 2001. 4 is Baylor, Cesaro, Rusev, and Kevin Owens from Raw 2016. 3 was Neville, Zayn, Breeze, and Kidd at NXT TakeOver. 2 was Miz, Cesaro, Owens, and Zayn from Extreme Rules 2016. And then the best ever was Cena, Edge, Orton, and Michaels at Backlash 2007. So very heavily weighted to more recent matches, but just to give you a little flavor for what's out there. I'm digging this one though, man. Bretton.
Well, just been, yeah, we've had, go ahead.
I was gonna say, it's pretty much been Bretton, Austin the whole time, and Taker and Vader the whole time.
Well, and they're not, it's odd too. We haven't really seen like the three or like 2-on-1 or 3-on-1. Like they're just kind of wrestling in their own little bubbles of, you had like Taker and Austin for a while. You've got Austin and Brett now. Like they're really wrestling two matches in the same ring. Like, I mean, they're not really, they were getting each other's way a little bit, but it's not bad actually.
It's interesting. It's a full year before Austin would become champion, obviously, but I was watching the promo that he did before this match. Dude, I mean, he was ready to go at this point. I mean, he was ready to be champion. You know, I love the build for another year to get to the title on him, but dude, right. This guy was absolutely ready to be champion. He was just great. Just such good stuff. You know, also on this show was China's debut.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot to mention that earlier. She debuted by choking out Marlena during the, an exchange between Goldust and Triple H. And that's the thing is, you know, even like, you know, 95, 96, 97 WWF, far from perfect, but they always tried to deliver with a main event, you know? And it's like, I wish that the rest of the cards were as good as the main events, because there'd be a lot of shit, but then like whoever the two guys were in the main event, they'd go 20 minutes, they'd have a really good match. I just felt like they always did main events really well during this era.
So one thing too, that I was kind of reading, and this talked to, you know, we recently had the Goldberg Drew match and kind of the passing of the torch at the end of that one. And it was an article of like, and you and I've talked about it, of like building stars. We talk about this all the time, like in kind of what was happening. And Goldberg, you know, for the shit I give him even too, just not being a huge fan of him, of, you know, and I find it funny that Goldberg is the one that's saying it's hard to build mega stars in 2021. But one of the things he did say, this is a quote, it said, there were a lot of badass dudes in that locker room. And when I came in, and the heels and baby faces were never seen in public together. Things have changed exponentially, and I can't say it's for the better. Do you think, like, and you and I've talked about it before, and I just don't know, you know, we have the oldest Rumble, you have Edge probably going to be the main event of WrestleMania, unless something weird happens. You and I had sent you a link this week too, and it was discussing, and I think even I was shocked that the last time there were not part-timers in the main event of WrestleMania was 2011. And I, you know, part, you know, the last few years you had Brock and Drew, you had Undertaker, you had Brock who was part-timer, you had Undertaker, AJ, you know, Undertaker was kind of on the way out. You had Ronda versus Becky versus Charlotte, but Ronda was the part-timer. You had before Brock and Roman, which, you know, Brock, it's hard to say he's part-time necessarily, but, you know, Brock and Roman, then you had Undertaker, Roman 2017, Undertaker's part-time, Triple H, Roman 2016, like Triple H, like, is this part of the reason, like, you know, they're not building stars, is they're not putting them in the right spots? Like, you know, cause you've got this four way, you know, we're watching this match and these are four guys that like, they can go, they've been going, it's been a really good match to this point. Like, you know, how do you, like, I just don't even know what, you know, when we say, oh, we're not building stars, but I don't even know what we're looking for. Like, what is the solution here to get fans to watch again and be interested again?
So, should WrestleMania be special? Yes or no?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I don't know where you're going with this, but yes.
There's your answer, because you need fresh matchups. Okay. And Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre is a fresh mashup. Rousey, you know, in a tag match, or Rousey in that three-way match, it's fresh, it's unique, it's different. So, you know, when you were producing a handful of pay-per-views and a one-hour Raw each week, you could hold off on combining people and bringing people together. Okay. You can't do that anymore. So my point is that you need part-timers. You need guys that are, you know, not full-time, because that, you know, integrating a Goldberg or a Cena or a Lesnar or a Taker or a Rousey, integrating them into the fold is what gives WrestleMania something fresh. And in terms of new stars, look, you put McIntyre over clean against Lesnar. You put mm-hmm. him over clean against Goldberg. You put Braun Strowman over clean against Goldberg. I mean, these part-timers are losing quite a bit of these matches, but, and I love Drew McIntyre. What's he done for the product in terms of business? Is he selling an ungodly amount of merch? No. Have the ratings gone up? No. And again, I really like McIntyre, but you've given him a year. You've put him over everyone. He lost one match to Orton, but he got his title back immediately. What more can you do? You know, he's clearly not a mega star. Okay. I think this heel Roman Reigns, I think you have something. Agreed. But again, it's not moving the needle on ratings. Maybe because he's a heel, I don't know. But it's, I mean, that's what's so tough. It's not like the part-timers are coming in and always winning. I mean, look, you technically put Fiend over Cena last year.
Yeah.
What did that do? Well, Jeff, it did nothing. Why? Because they did a shitty job booking him. Okay.
Yep. Well, and you raised the interesting point here, though,
because the product being soft. Yeah. The storylines are soft. I mean, well, what storylines are you really caring about? So now Vader was going back up to the top rope, but Bret Hart's going to get him.
Now, though, for me, though, I look at WrestleMania, though, and we might differ on this one. Yeah, I look Vader at WrestleMania
bumping all over. Bumping, the place, yeah. He's probably going to be taking a suplex
from the middle here. Rope. Yep. I mean, is WrestleMania the culmination, or is WrestleMania the start of something? Because I look at WrestleMania as it should be the culmination of, you know, Royal Rumble and what we get to.
It's the season finale, and then Raw and SmackDown the following week are the season premiere.
Yes, I agree. And so, and I don't know if they're doing a good job of that. Like, it's hard to say. Like, same with Wrestle Kingdom. Like, we know after the G1 for a few months, like, then how they, it's the same type style of then at Wrestle Kingdom, who's going to be the main event. Like, we just know that. And so yeah.
If you believe what you see in the dirt sheets about them never really seeming to know what their WrestleMania plans are that far in advance, which I believe, I actually think that's true.
Oh, agreed.
Based on everything we've seen on TV. What's the excuse here?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got what, you know, 30 nerds sitting there writing for you every week. Okay. You've got this massive team of writers. You've got every resource that you need as a billion-dollar company. So what I don't understand is why can't the 30 writers just figure out a really good plan, especially right now, because no one's really getting hurt. It's not like, oh, guys get hurt all the time. Plans change. I mean, why can't you craft out, you know, at least always know what your next 90 days or your next 120 days are? I mean, that's just good business. Any business should know what their strategy is over the next 90 days. Any TV show, I mean, if you're writing an episode of Breaking Bad, guess what? Like, it's not like you're writing an episode and going, oh, what do we write next week? You have storyline arcs. You know what your season's going to look like. You know what you're building towards. You know what the key moments are going to be. What's going to culminate? When's it going to culminate? Okay. So I don't understand. I truly don't understand what is so difficult about planning these things out 4, 5, 6 months in advance? Why is it always a mystery? Like, who's going to be in WrestleMania? Like, who's going to be the main event? What are we building towards? Like, I just don't get it. There's just no excuse for it.
Well, and
this business was better when Vince McMahon and Pat Patterson and Bruce Pritchard sat outside Vince's pool and wrote what was going to happen in the territory for the next 6 months.
Well, and I compare it to like almost like the Marvel stuff. If they can make a story make sense over 10 years, granted those, you know, movies and the, you know, some other things happening, but at the same time, like, yeah, there's no reason, even if you do it in like, you know, seasons and do 6 month blocks and then you give different people, and maybe it is NXT is where, you know, shit, when you get Edge on NXT, I just really question, like, are you, you know, is there literally nobody else that's around? And so here you go, Brett, like we've just been over here talking and this is over the top. Brett takes Undertaker and that is the end of the match.
Yep.
And so no pinfall here. That was something I did not point out at the start here. This was, you could go over the top rope to lose. And so that's why a lot of it was locked into the ring, but there was some out of the ring action. Again, Shawn Michaels rule, you got to go over the top, not through or under, but whatever. So, but hot action, start to finish. Okay.
So Bret Hart is your champion. Bret Hart now has to go on to Raw tomorrow night to wrestle Sid. Taker's pissed off. Felt like he got screwed. Your last few weeks of Bret Hart is a baby face right now. Austin was the antagonist the whole time. Vader, I mean... Again, yeah, I'm sure he wasn't in his prime, but man, he was just fun to watch. So,
yeah.
And that's your pay-per-view. So, Jeff, let's get into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
So, what kind of happened after this one that, you know, a lot of this just, it kind of came to an end. You had at the time Paul Bearer and kind of, you know, who was with him, Vader and Mankind, they decided to go after the tag championships. Even though the two of them had a little bit of a feud or kind of some brawls themselves, they actually failed to win the tag team gold. It was WrestleMania 13. They lost to Owen and the British Bulldog. After this show as well, too, like Vader and Undertaker, their feud just kind of came to an end, but you did have Austin and Hart's continuing in a big way. In that mandatory kind of defense against Sid on Raw, Hart actually ended up losing the championship after Austin interfered. He had attacked him. Well, Hart had Sid and locked in the sharpshooter. So Sid ended up, you know, pinning Brett, gave him the powerbomb, winning his second WWF championship at that time. But because of that, then you then had the Undertaker was given the number one contender status in that match at WrestleMania. But, you know, Hart still being frustrated just at kind of how, you know, all this played out. They ended up having a match, you know, or wanting a match at WrestleMania, having a match at WrestleMania. And this was, of course, the famous, submission match, and having that. So, you know, Hart did eventually get a rematch against Sid as well, too. It was a steel cage match before that WrestleMania. Yeah. And so just, you know, again, both Sid, Undertaker and Austin being involved in that one as well, too. And so, but you had some interesting kind of how this played out was, you know, during the steel cage match, you know, Vince, you know, really attempting to interview Brett. Brett grabbed the microphone, you know, kind of shoved Vince, went into this, you know, frustrated kind of tirade of how pissed he was. You know, Sid, you know, everybody kind of still brawling with Sid, Austin and the Undertaker. And so, well, some of the feuds themselves kind of quit. The guys were kind of still in each other's realms and kind of, you know, things like that. And so, but this kind of incident is one of the points where, at least in like some of the things I was reading and, you know, everyone differs on it, but like, what was the start of the Attitude Era. And a lot of people point to this being the start of like the Vince McMahon character after Brett kind of went off on him and, you know, he's starting to get Mr. McMahon out of this as well too. So, but that, you know, of course you had Hart and Austin having their submission match.
Well, I was going to say one thing I'll say too, is that WrestleMania 13, And I don't think we've covered a match. Oh yeah, I guess we did the submission match, but the thing about WrestleMania 13 is it was just grittier. Like, you know, you had even like Legion of Doom and Nation of Domination. They had like a Chicago street fight. You had the submission match, you know, Taker is your champion. So you're right. That things were this Attitude Era. There was no one, you know, match or moment that became the Attitude Era, but it's like, this was right around when, you know, you went from cartoony campy WWF to the Attitude Era. I mean, it was right around here. Like, I mean, if you wanted to point it like this match and, you know, that steel cage match and stuff on Raw, that's about it, man. So if you want to see the transition, this is the time to start watching those Raws and those pay-per-views.
Yeah, and that WrestleMania 13, and we've covered, you know, we've got some matches that were interesting from that one, but you had, of course, the two of them, Hart and Austin, having their match. This was Ken Shamrock as the guest referee of this one, and Hart winning this one. Of course, Austin passing out, blood soaked, locked in the sharpshooter. Five-star match out of these guys, and absolutely deserved every bit of that five-star. And so, and that was the double turn as well, too, and then going on Hart found it. Just a lot that came out of that match, which was great. And then, of course, you had, you know, Undertaker and Sid battling for, at the time, Sid having the heavyweight championship. There was the no DQ match. Hart actually interfered in this match. He helped the Undertaker beat Sid. And so Undertaker winning, again, the WrestleMania streak, but winning that championship from there. So yeah, just, you know, interesting how it kind of played out. Just, yeah, it was good stuff. And you had, you know, I didn't really talk much about Vader. You know, him at this point, you had the kind of Camp Cornette and him being involved with that as well, too. You know, or prior to this, excuse me, and kind of that happening. You know, we get to the Canadian Stampede match as well, too, which we've talked about that show on this one before. And so he really wasn't in WWE for very long. Like, he was really a jobber at the end of this. He had a feud with Mark Henry, which Vader ended up losing. But yeah, it just, you know, and then he ended up, you know, he really left, went back to, you know, All Japan, because he just wasn't booked right. And like you talked about it during the match. It's just, it's almost like they didn't know what to do with the guy. Yeah, it just interesting take, you know, how it played out. But
I think he had lost a step, but I don't think it should have prevented him from getting a big push. I just think he was just underutilized, and you didn't
get it was a crowded top of the card too. So yeah. I get it at that time. You know, there was some of the best of the best. So where are we at with the rankings here? Kind of what's going on and things like that. You have, Austin was number 3, Undertaker number 6, Bret Hart 20, Vader 46, and so you had some very top guys at this one. Hard to beat this one, but the match of the year, according to Pro Wrestling, was, of course, Bret and Austin at that Mania 13 submission match. Interesting here, the feud of the year, though, was not Bret and Austin. It was Macho Man and DDP. And so we'll have to go back and look at a little bit more 1997 Macho and DDP. But having that, interesting, too, on this, I kind of kept looking through the lists and kind of seeing where everybody was at. A lot of these guys, of course, at the top, the most popular wrestler, 1997, Austin was second place, but the most hated was Bret. And Bret also had the comeback of the year, 1997. So these guys were at the top, like that year, 1997, for all these guys was just a big year, especially Bret and Austin, which makes sense. But you kind of have that. So, all right. And so throughout this one, you know, so we'll start with the PW Torch kind of review and write up on this one. So they ended up giving this one 4.5 stars. So it's tough to criticize the booking of the match given Austin's unexpected early exit due to the re-injuring of his knee, but it was good enough to be a match of the year candidate. Sid came out and stared Bret down after the match and the event went off the air. Jim Ross put it best, announced it. Jim Ross put in the best announcing performance for a match in a few years. He was excellent all night and effectively reestablished himself as the best in the business and calling big live events. What a comeback after, quote, turning heel last year in the Diesel and Razor Ramon angle. He covered well for the inevitable wrestler miscues and added to the dramatic high points like no other announcer can do. The blood added to the intensity of the match. It became an early match of the year candidate. And like I said, 4.5 stars on that one. One of the, you know, kind of beat writers on this one, the Final Four was an interesting mix. Austin and especially Hart seemed off their games, while Undertaker was better than average, which isn't saying much. For the most part, it was Vader carrying the proceeding by looking around for someone to work spots with. When one person got worn out, he simply went off looking for a new playmate. I got thoughts on that. We'll get to that. So you got, that is the, of course, Pro Wrestling Torch giving that one 4.5, the Wrestling Observer going with 4.25. An excellent main event, but the effect of the ultimate title win by Hart was taken down several pegs by the circumstances, which included outside interference in the final elimination. And the fact all the eliminations were by adding or were by the added quote job saving over the top rope stipulation. You have to give all four credit. And then this is a difficult match to put together that you don't want to be walking on someone else's spots. The star of the match was Vader, who after a series of lackluster performances probably caused as much by illness and injuries as anything else, to the point where people were writing him off as a major star, staged an impressive comeback. So you got 4.5, 4.25. I was not as impressed with Vader. I think neither of us were. I thought overall, like Brett and you and I were talking through the match, but like Brett and Austin was where my eyes were. Like I was kind of watching what they were doing and things like that. And that was, at least for me, like this is where the storyline, you know, it made sense. Like that was just kind of the feud that was going into it. And that was what we're going to keep getting. And so, and maybe it was because you did have the two big man, Vader and Taker. It just, you know, it wasn't working the same for me. So, yeah, I at the same time, like I'll give this one an 8. I think it was a really good match. There was a lot of action. And like I said, I do think they did a good job of kind of, I say, quote, avoiding each other and not having those spots where they're just on top of each other. So that was a plus. But yeah, I think for the most part, though, like it just an 8, because there was a lot of stuff happening, and whether they were outside the ring or inside the ring. And yes, the blood, of course, is always going to be a kind of selling point in a match like this. It's still a good match. And I would probably rank it lower if not for the feuds and the build and really the aftermath that came from this one, because this wasn't the kind of final chapter in this feud. There was still more to go, which is why I won't rank it higher, but I will give it a few more, like a point and a half more, or point more, because, or either half a point or a point more, because all of it was making sense, which the last 2 weeks we've had episodes where the build has just made sense. And so that's what's kind of boosting the score for me. What do you got?
Well, I first have a trivia question for you. Who was Vader's final WWF match? Televised WWF match on October 11th of 1998.
Well, he had, like I said, I just said he had that feud with Mark Henry, but I'm going to guess it wasn't Mark Henry. If he was jobbing people out, I don't know who it could be.
His final televised WWF match was against Edge.
Huh. Okay. Was it a Raw or what?
Like Sunday
what
was Night Heat.
Sunday Night Heat. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Good to know.
There you go.
Yep. So what do you got? What's your score? What are you thinking?
You know, I really like this. I got this at a 7.5. I almost want to go higher, but I'm going to go 7.5. I think it was a really solid, fun match. I like the storyline a lot. The build made sense. You know, these guys kind of all stayed intermingled afterwards. There's a lot of build and a lot of aftermath involving these guys and, you know, where they'd go. A really solid 7.5, just a lot of fun, really good match. It's a fun piece of history. This 97 era. What about you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I said, I'm an 8. And so I think that it just, for me, that kind of makes sense of like, you know, the build and all that stuff. So yeah.
All right. Well, we both liked it. This is a fun one to go back and watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad we did this one. And then next week, we are on the road. Next week is our kind of special episode, one where we realized that we had not, I'll spoil it for everybody here, that we had not.
Spoil it for me too, because I don't remember.
So this is going to be, we're going a different road here. You and I had talked about the Rockers and trying to do a Rockers match. And so this is going to be the Hart Foundation versus the Rockers. This is a a crossover Japan WWF show in the Tokyo Dome. And so we're going to have to dig and scour the internet. I know it's out there, this match, but it is allegedly, I don't know. We're going to find out when we watch it next week, one of the best Rockers matches ever. And so we're bringing two of Tom's favorite worlds together with the Heartbreak Kid and Marty Jannetty. And finally, we're getting one step closer to having Marty Jannetty on the show for Tom. And so this is the start of that. We're on the road to Mania, but we're covering a Rockers match at the Tokyo Dome, and then we're getting into Mania. So one more.
Well, you better be able to find the footage for this match, because it's going to be tough for us to cover if not.
It'll be out there. I know it is. So. Okay. Good stuff. But all right. So with that, at Payoff Pod, check it out. Thanks for listening. And, you know, let us know what you think about the show and all that good stuff. We talked about a lot today. It was good stuff, though.
It's a great day. Great episode.
Yep.
All right. As always, thank you for joining us on The Payoff.